I'm a little off on my evening messages because a couple of weeks ago, because we keep having all these interruptions, I talked about three good friends of, you know, David that he could be thankful for. And, you know, Ittai and Zadok and Hushai, they were the good guys. Today I have to talk about the bad guys. And so we're just a little bit off on our timing. These are, you know, whenever you have something like this going on, remember the situation David is in. His son has rebelled against him. He's been forced to flee for his life and with his family and all those loyal to him from Jerusalem. As he went out of the city, he kept encountering people. It's like they came out of the woodwork. And the first three he met were a huge encouragement to him. They were people who were loyal to him and supportive, and they came to help out. They were godsends. But the people we're looking at today were just the opposite. They were the people that bring discouragement, kind of beat you when you're down, to kind of make it even more difficult than it already was. But even they have a purpose in God's plan. And that's what comes out. And David demonstrates his awareness of this. Perhaps we can learn how to handle our adversity, because we will all have it. And so let's examine the three enemies David meets in his departure from Jerusalem. Now, before I begin, there's something else I want to clarify. Although David is being chastened because of his sin, and we know that's in the background, it comes out over and over again, this, that he is being chastened because of his sin with Bathsheba and with Uriah the Hittite. He's brought all this upon him. But he's still the anointed king. And to oppose the anointed king was to oppose God's kingdom that God has established with David. It's very similar to when David was fleeing for his life from Saul. Remember, Saul had been rejected as king, and God was going to bring him down. In fact, he'd already anointed David to take his place. But David understood even then, he's still God's anointed. And it's up to God to deal with him when God decides to deal with him. And for him to take it in his hands to take Saul's life was totally inappropriate. And he had a couple opportunities to do so. But he held back because that's the Lord's anointed. Well, now it's David's time. And David is the Lord's anointed. God is dealing with him because of his sin. But God has not decided to remove him yet. He's still the king. I shouldn't say yet, because he says he never will. There'll always be someone from the line of David to sit upon the throne, particularly when it comes to his Messiah. So let's look at this. First one is Ziba. Starting at verse 1 of chapter 16. 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. And when David was a little past the top of the hill, I think it's interesting, even the geography in this story. He's going up the hill, struggling, kind of exhausted, but on the way up, he keeps meeting people, encouraging them, helping them. But when he gets to the top of the hill, he starts to go downhill. And I don't know, is that where the saying everything goes downhill comes from? I don't know, because as he's going downhill, it's when he meets all these people who are not supportive. Behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins and 100 summer fruits and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. That sounds really good. Remember Ziba? We saw him earlier. I'm sure you don't, because that was quite a while back. But that was Mephibosheth's steward. Mephibosheth was the descendant of Saul who became crippled when he was dropped as a little boy. And he couldn't walk. And when David became king, he wanted to say, who of the household of Saul can I show kindness to? Because I promised Jonathan I would do that, Saul's son. And the only one left was this Mephibosheth. And so he appointed Ziba to be a steward to take care of the whole estate that belonged to Mephibosheth and to help him out. Well, now this Ziba brings all these provisions. There's animals for transportation. Some think there's just two. Some think there may have been a straddle of them, it could be taken that way. Whatever, but he brought these donkeys. Normally, they're kept far from the city. You don't bring donkeys into the city. They leave things around. And so they always kept them outside the city. But because Mephibosheth was crippled, they were allowed inside the city. And so he had some donkeys, and he's bringing them to help out David. And he brings food, 200 loaves of bread. That's a lot of bread. That's more bread than we get from Panera. That's a lot of bread. 100 bunches of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and Scripture says it, a bottle of wine. Some think it was probably 42 to 53 quart container. That's what it's described, so a lot of wine. But still not enough for the large entourage they had, but it was something. It was an encouragement to them. It was some supplies. It met a great need. And so how can I call Ziba, include him in the enemies, the negative people? He's come with provisions. Well, David asked him a couple questions. What do you mean by all these things? I mean, it strikes him as a little unusual. First off, those aren't his things. They're Mephibosheth's. He was a steward of Mephibosheth's house. They belong to him. And he says, well, why did you bring all these things? He says, well, I'm seeking to help. The asses for your household, your women, your children, the elderly. In other words, some people that might need someone, right? That's why some wonder if there's actually more than just two that was just had the food on the two. And there's food for the young men. There's wine for those who are faint. I'm trying to help out. So David asked him a second question. Where is thy master's son? Now that's kind of interesting the way he words it. Where is thy master's son? That's an allusion to Saul. Ziba had been before very loyal to Saul. For 7 years he'd sided with Saul's family against David. He's recognized this. You've always been loyal to the family of Saul. And that's why I trust you to Mephibosheth. Why are you doing all this? Well, I can tell you in one word. Ziba was an opportunist. He realized, this could really work out well for me. If I can get there and win over David's support, and he must have suspected that David could get back in the power. So I meet him out here, kind of away from the city, he's already parted away from there, and show my support to David. David, when things turn around, he'll remember me, and I'll be ingratiated to him. I'll come to his aid. And if I'm wrong, and it doesn't go well for David, no one's going to really know what all I've done because I was loyal to the house of Saul. You know? And they'll never see me as being that sport. So it could be a win-win. I come out ahead. So he's an opportunist. He's seen and ingratiated himself to David. Because David's very vulnerable. You know when things are going really, really rough? We look for a support from anybody. Just somebody to show that they're on our side, to be there for us. David is very vulnerable. He's been betrayed by those close to him, even his own son. As he's leaving the city, he feels like he's lost everything. He's had some friends come by and support him, and now you kind of are watching. You just kind of imagine him as he goes along. He's kind of watching. Who are the people that are still with me? Who's shown me support? I've had a few guys. Ittai, he's sticking with me, and Zadok the priest is on my side, and Hushai, but I've sent them all away. Is there anyone else here? And then all of a sudden you have this Ziba show up. The last guy in the world I would have expected was Ziba. And here he is. offer him provisions. And so he tends to trust him. And he says, so why are you here? And he says, well, and where's your master, son? Where's Mephibosheth? Now, Mephibosheth is crippled. I've mentioned that already. He's taken his donkeys. It's not like Mephibosheth can even get there. But he's asking, why isn't he with you? Why isn't he here? And he says, well, he has aspirations for the throne. Then said the king to Ziba, verse 3. The king said, and where is thy master? And Ziba said unto him, the king, know how he stresses the king. David is still the king. Behold, he abideth at Jerusalem, for he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Whoa. I've been reading the commentators on this. Some think he's telling the truth. I don't think so. Because that'd be the height of miscalculation. Absalom has all of Israel after him, and he's the one who's thrown off, and he's of the line of David. He has no desire to set up somebody from the line of Saul. And I haven't heard anyone rising up making a rebellion so that he can come there. Maybe he's implying that because of this conflict between you two that you're going to destroy each other and he can rise up. But there's no evidence of support for the house of Saul coming out of this. It'd be a height of miscalculations. No, I think he's an opportunist. He's trying to turn them away from Mephibosheth and pull that loyalty that was for Mephibosheth to himself. He's lying through his teeth. Because later on in chapter 19, just a couple chapters from now, kind of give you a coming events type thing. In verse 24, Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet nor trimmed his beard nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed. So he's been mourning ever since the king had to leave Jerusalem. And he says, I wanted to come. Ziba left me behind. My support has always been with you. No, he was making a false accusation against Mephibosheth. He's lying. But David, at this moment of weakness, moment of sorrow for him, when he's down, takes him at his word. And said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain unto Mephibosheth. And Ziba says, yes! I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, O Lord my O king. You got to be careful when times are tough and things are going rough, because sometimes we make decisions too quickly. Sometimes we assume things are true that are not. And I always tell people, when you're going through a rough time, when you're going through grief, when you're going through trials, be extra careful. Extra careful. Because that's when we often make bad decisions. He caused David to wrong another man. He took him for his word, and he takes the things from Mephibosheth and gives it to Ziba without ever hearing the other side. Ever hearing till later what Mephibosheth had to say about it. And so be careful. When you're under pressure, things are not always as they appear. And when you're going through a rough time, people will come into a situation, will try to manipulate you and take advantage of you at that moment of weakness, because they know that you're not on top of things. You're struggling. And that's why I lump him in with the enemies. He's somebody who's manipulating David to get something for himself, trying to deceive him, and he's succeeding. And we get the impression when, if things turn the other way, he'd flip over to the other side on a dime. He's not loyal. Be careful of that. People will manipulate you. Second of all, you have Shimei. He's a little clearer. We don't have any question what Shimei thinks. He lets everybody know. Verse 5. And when King David came to Bahurim, behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, and the son of Gera. And he came forth and cursed still as he came. And he cast stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, you bloody man, and thou man of Belial. And the Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. Nah, 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 nah. You know, that type of thing. Shimei. Now, it's interesting, because I always kind of took the view that this was just kind of some low, just a no good man. He's a no good man. But he's actually a rich man. When you look at the description, he was a prominent man in the community who was a huge supporter of Saul. So he's not a man of no renown. He's somebody who's recognized. And he's evidently up on the hill, just far enough the way that he can be heard and far enough that he can throw rocks and dirt, and yet far enough away that he feels safe, that no one's going to get to him. And so he just badgers David, pelts him with rocks and dirt and verbal abuse, and he calls David a murderer. You man of blood. Now that had to really hurt, because you know, I know what? David is a murderer. He murdered Uriah the Hittite. He's just not the murderer of the one Shimei thinks he's the murderer of. He was thinking of the family of Saul. Some wondered if he was complicit in the Philistines killing off Saul and his sons. Later on, Ishbosheth, was he behind that plot and helped have him killed? And what about Abner? When he came there, he came in peace to David, and later on he's killed by Joab. And we understand from Scripture that David had nothing to do with any of those. He was clear in the south when Saul was killed. He had nothing to do with the death of Ishbosheth. And Joab went against his instruction and killed off Abner. David was innocent of all those. And so he's really being falsely accused by Shimei. But David knows deep down in his heart, okay, he's not guilty of those, but he's still guilty. All this is happening because of what he did with Uriah, what he did with Bathsheba. And that's what's hard when we're really beaten down and people start attacking us. I always say it's always interesting to me, because I can think of a lot of things people get upset with me about. I won't tell you what those are, okay? But when people attack me, it's often about things I'm like, I didn't see that one coming. That's not even true. Because the enemy is a liar. A liar. And he accuses him of all these things that David had no part in. But you know what? When we have someone who's attacking us, and they're out and they're mad, and they're out to let us have it, you cannot reason with them. So often, they're just so convinced. And he is so sure he knows this conspiracy is true. And no matter what you say, no matter how you convince him, you're not going to change his mind. He doesn't want to discuss it. He doesn't want to debate it. He just wants to hit you with a rock. You know? He wants to make you suffer. We all ran into people like that. And they hit us when we're down. They hit us when we're at our low. But we always have some good friends by our side, so. Abishai is a good friend. He says, I've got the solution. I know that when you chop people's heads off, they don't curse anymore. I can take care of this for you. Just let me go up the hill and off with his head and we're done with this. He will not say another word. And he won't be throwing rocks either. Just let me take care of him. Now, it's a good thing he asked David, because if I had been there, I might be tempted to say, go for it. But no. It was just, no, no. And it's interesting the reason he gives. He holds him back, and he says, you know what? He may be getting his instructions from the Lord. This had to really shock Abishai, like, what? Well, the Lord may have told him to do this, because David understands that even though Shimei is totally wrong in the reasons why he calls him these things, it isn't that they're not justified to some degree. And he knows that all that's taken place is part of God's chastening of David because of what he's done. He said that the throne would be taken from him by his son. Or someone from his own family, it says. And that's exactly what's happened. And David is being driven out of the city, and he knows it's his own sin that's caused this to take place. But he also knows God. And it's interesting what he brings out of this. Let's go back in their text. And David said unto Abishai and to all of his servants, behold, my son, which came forth of my bowels, he seeketh my life. My very own son. That's where my deepest wound is. How much more now may this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. You realize when we go through rough times, and I remind myself of this over and over again, I try to remember, is the fact that God is sovereign, right? And God allows things in our lives for purposes. Sometimes it's not very pleasant. Sometimes he allows hardships into our lives. But he always has a reason. And David says, God's bidden him to do it. God's allowed this for some reason. In fact, I deep down know the reason. But look what he says next. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. I've got to receive the chastening of God. I've got to accept it if this is the way God's chosen to chase me. Because I know my God is one who looks down after a while, and when you realize I've gotten my lesson, then God can bless me again. It's like when you discipline a child that's done wrong. We don't delight in the punishment, do we? Don't raise your hand. Okay? We chasten them, but we hate doing it. They don't understand that always. But we do it because we know it has to be done. They've got to learn the lesson. All we care about really is that they learn not to do this anymore. We just want them to get the lesson. And David says, I want to suffer it fully so God understands. I got the lesson. I understand what I did was wrong. I'm grieved over it. And one of the ways we can tell is when the kid accepts the punishment. And understands, you're right, I had that coming. I deserve this. I accept my consequences. That's a sign of true repentance. The person who's not repentant is one that says, I can't believe he did that. I can't believe I'm suffering this punishment. Wow, can they do it? And then you obviously didn't get the point. You didn't learn your lesson. David clearly understands. Lord, have mercy. And I'm willing to take whatever punishment you decide to dish out because I have it coming.